The Clare Byrne Show on News Talk
with Aviva Insurance.
My next guest spent two decades in the Irish Navy, rising to become captain of the LEIFA. And during her career, she played a key role in intercepting a major cocaine shipment. She took part in the rescue of sailors from a sunken submarine and so much more. In her memoir, Be Like the Sea, Life, Learnings and Leadership from an Irish Navy Captain, she shares the experiences, the challenges and the lessons that shaped her time in the Navy. And she's here now to tell the tale. Former Irish Navy Captain Marie Gleeson. Marie, you're so welcome.
Thank you, Claire.
Lovely to have you here. I said to you when you came in that I got lost in the book, and I really did. I loved reading it. It's a fascinating story from start to finish, which we're going to go through now. But in the beginning, it wasn't really the Navy that you wanted to join, was it?
No. I'd say I would have been fascinated by the Navy back then because I didn't know anything about the Navy. So I come from a really small dairy farm in Tipperary. I grew up on the farm, eldest of six, out in the farm with my dad.
You're like us in Leash, you were lucky to see the sea once a year.
Exactly. And I had an uncle in the army. I was used to running around fields. I probably didn't see myself doing a 9-to-5 job realistically. So the army was the one I wanted. And unfortunately, my life took a bit of a off the rails moment on a number of different factors that I talk about in the book. So the trajectory that I was on, I came off, didn't get the army, just missed out. And then the Navy had only just, imagine, started taking women in the mid 1990s, which is crazy when you think about it.
Go back to the trajectory there that you talk about and explain to people what happened around that time.
Yeah, so I suppose eldest daughter would have been, you know, ticking all the boxes, driven, committed, loved being out and about. So would have done very well at school, done well in sport, done well in, you know, in plays and shows and stuff. So when I was 16, there was kind of a coordination of different events happened. So our school had, I'd been in a convent for 2 years, you know, 60 of us, we all knew each other really well. The teachers knew us really well. And then they amalgamated the three schools in the town in Cashel, the brothers, the tech and the convent. So suddenly it was this massive school. So I probably got a bit lost in that, you know, the people who maybe were keeping an eye on me wasn't there anymore. And it was mixed. So there was a whole transition in that time of your life. The hormones are kicking in. There's a lot going on.
All very unsettling. Yeah.
And then my parents, my dad would be a very entrepreneurial, spirited person. So they bought a pub. Now, we weren't meant to end up working in the pub, but different things happened. Manager didn't turn up on the day. So ended up working in the pub. Didn't know anything about pubs, you know, and suddenly very social person, quite outgoing, gregarious, loved the crack. So I was fell into lots of different things. So my academic trajectory went definitely off the track. So didn't do very well in my leaving cert, you know, didn't get the army, just missed out, got into a course in UCC I didn't really want to be in. So just
a little bit lost.
Yeah. Definitely.
And then the Navy pops up on your radar.
Yeah. So my uncle would have advised me at the time because I definitely wanted the army. So he said, do the Air Corps, the Navy interviews. And I said, I'm not doing the Air Corps because I don't want to fly. I'll do the Navy. No problem. They won't take me. Like dairy farmer's daughter, no maritime experience. So like when we got through all the stage gates and the letter came and my parents and myself sat down and it was like the Navy, I was like, I asked my mum, would she ring competition section to see if they made a mistake? So that's how off course I was. But I think when I went to the boot camp then, like the boot camp is, you know, that really intense military, like physical, but you're being pushed and challenged. I loved it. Like I loved being up in the Curragh. So I kind of felt like if I excelled in the Curragh, they would realise the mistake and they might keep me. And then obviously I did great, but they couldn't keep me. So then I ended up back down in the base learning about navigation, spherical trigonometry, all these crazy subjects. But actually getting out onto a ship for the first time, first of all, I don't get seasick, which is hugely beneficial when you're in a career that's maritime based.
Well, yes, I can imagine that that's bottom line, you know.
Yeah, but I really loved being at sea, like from the get-go. You know, once I got used to the kind of circumstances and, you know, the intensity of the engine room or, you know, being up on deck, learning about boats and how to launch and drive small boats, starting to learn about navigation. But actually, for me, it's crazy when you think about it. But like, I actually really loved the sea. I loved the expanse of the ocean. Like I loved when we were 200 miles off the west coast of Ireland, away from everything. But it's hard to put it into words, but there's a power in the sea. And I think the sea is a very feminine energy as well. So like, you know, you can have a flat, calm ocean and 24 hours later, it's a raging storm when you're out there. So I loved that power.
But The other element of it is that you're in enclosed quarters, you know, with people that you might choose to be with, and there's no escape. How did you deal with that? Yeah. Did that bother you at all?
I don't know. I probably bothered people more than they bothered me, Claire, if I'm being really honest. Like, very enthusiastic, very driven. I talk a lot. I'm full on. So like, some of the advice you get in a military career is to kind of keep yourself in the middle, be the grey person in the class, because then you're not under too much heat and you're also ticking along. I wasn't great at taking that advice. So I was like normally throwing myself into it. So I think, for me, learning to understand how I impacted on other people was a big part of the training. And one thing about the job, you get really tough feedback from the get-go. And when you have someone telling you where you're maybe not reaching the mark, whether it's your physical, whether it's your conduct, whether it's the approach you're taking, you know, you first of all, you take that as reflection on you and you hear it all as bad stuff.
Yes.
But actually, there's
which is
a
natural.
Moment. Yeah, totally. Oh, yeah. But there's a moment when something flicks in your head, or for me anyway, where it was like, well, actually, they're trying to make me better and they're trying to make me, you know, a better asset here, part of the team, and realizing that sometimes I didn't need to be as enthusiastic as I was, or maybe that I was, you know, having an impact on other people who maybe were struggling with being at sea or maybe weren't as outgoing as I was. So actually realizing that you can moderate your presence and have a powerful impact for other people.
Yeah, and some people, you know, your superiors were really good to you and really encouraging, but you're very open and honest about the fact that not everybody was like that. And, you know, you've mentioned already that women were pretty new to the Irish Navy, and there were some men who didn't want you around.
Yeah, definitely. It's funny, actually, when I look back now, sometimes they were the easier ones to deal with in terms of, like, you knew that they weren't really 100% sure. You knew maybe they didn't want women there. So nearly for me, there was a motivation factor in proving them wrong. Like, I can do this absolutely as well as anybody else. But then actually some of the more tough individuals to deal with were the guys who had daughters our age, because sometimes they wanted to mind you. So, oh, Cadet Gleason, you can't pull that line, or somebody jump in there and help Cadet Gleason with that. And you're like, no, let me do it. I can do it. So actually having a conversation with someone who's trying to help you and asking them to step back, like, that's actually really tough.
Yeah, because discussion. That's more hurtful for them, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah,
because
yeah.
they think they're doing the right thing.
Yeah, totally. Like, so I can remember navigating one of those conversations. But yeah, like, there's a book or a chapter in the book where I say a ship is only as good as her captain. And the lessons that I learned about how to deal with people and how to speak to people and how to get the best out of people, or vice versa, you know, how your presence can actually impact negatively on someone and undermine their confidence. Like, when you're a navigation officer and you're responsible for navigating a ship, there's a unique relationship between you and the captain. And when you're giving that recommendation to the captain, how they answer you. So if they acknowledge you in a positive sense, they can still ask you a question, but it doesn't undermine your confidence. Whereas if they're like, really, come to port? Are you telling me to come to port? And you're like, oh, gee, am I? Yes, I am. Like, so it just the tonality piece. But I think I was very lucky, and I know not everybody was as lucky, but I did meet really good people along the way in the main, and the people that I met that weren't great people probably helped me to be a better leader in the future and a better captain and a better person.
Yeah, so you weren't surprised then to hear all of the stories that have emerged in general from the Defence Forces in recent times. I'm thinking of particular the Women of Honour movement.
I was surprised in that I wouldn't have had first-hand experience of it, and I wouldn't have had a massive awareness of it. And I talk about this in the book, in that, you know, it was 2 years after I left the Navy when the Women of Honour documentary came out. And I can tell you, I sat at the kitchen table and I was devastated for the women who were telling their stories. But particularly for me, there was a story of a young girl in the Navy who had this horrendous experience where, you know, she found herself in this difficult circumstance on a ship and people behaving totally inappropriately. And I suppose for me, part of it was the shock of, why didn't somebody step in and stop it? Because it was ridiculously silly behaviour. It was totally inappropriate. So how come nobody stepped in? We were trained to step in. And then also, like, our ship would have been at sea the year before that. And when I say, I mean the LEIFA.
Yes.
Like, I was a female captain. I had a female navigation officer, a female engineer, which was very unusual. That was not, you know, a stunt. It was just the way our postings had happened. And the systems on our ship were, you know, implemented fully, which meant that, you know, we had a zero tolerance on board for any kind of misconduct. So I think I was just so devastated for the people, but also really upset that that the systems didn't work.
And that it was allowed to happen.
Yeah, and that comes down to people, you know, and that's why, you know, it's a risk to come out and say that I absolutely think this is a great career and to say that I would be delighted if my daughters went in, because some people do feel it's not a safe place for women. But the way I look at it is the more women we get in there, into the defence forces, then the systems will be implemented properly. And therefore, you create better environments for men and women. And I think that's really, really important. So like the sea is a fantastic career, you know, I believe. And that's a dairy farmer's daughter from Tipperary. Like, but it just, it teaches you so much about life and people and, you know, how to deal with people and how to navigate all these peaks and troughs in your life and navigate really difficult times
and
as well.
Tell me, are your girls showing any interest in the Navy?
My eldest girl is very like me, but I don't know. Would she survive in the Navy? I don't think she could be grey in any shape or form. She's brilliant. She's full of enthusiasm. She's driven. She loves sport. So the potential is there. I don't know if she'd like it. And then my younger girl wants to be a pilot. So I haven't quite influenced her in the right direction at the moment, but we'll wait and see.
Let her off.
Yeah.
And I hope she gets there. I want to talk to you about Ciarán.
Yeah.
Because that really struck me in the book, how you wrote about it, how honest you were about it. So Ciarán was your first child and you knew before Ciarán was born that Ciarán was facing huge problems. And then Ciarán, this is what really touched me about it, because when Ciarán was born, he brought with him great hope, didn't he?
Yeah.
And yeah, I could tell from reading your description of it that despite what you were being told about what Ciarán's future was going to be, that you just hoped beyond hope that it wasn't going to happen the way it did.
Yeah. So I think for your listeners to fully appreciate the story, myself and John got married in May 2011. I also chose to marry a man from Leitrim Clare. Great stuff.
And they played football together.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. But we've never met each other. But yeah, so John and I got married in May 2011. And I had been diagnosed with polycystic ovarian syndrome. I had been told conception was going to be really difficult. Fertility was an issue. And we actually threw caution to the wind just before the wedding. So I was actually 4 weeks pregnant the day I got married. So when you look at our wedding video, there's this lovely moment between us in the church. Will you welcome the children, whatever? And you just see the two of us look at each other. And we were so excited and beyond delighted. And even though it had this massive career impact, at the same time, I was like, I can do this. I can manage the career and have a baby and, you know, go to see, it'll all be fine. And then we were with Professor Keelan O'Donoghue in Cork, who I didn't know at the time was going to become this amazing person in our life. And Keelan picked up something on our scan. We were just in as regular people in having your first, you know, anomaly scan at the 20-week mark. And she brought us back in a couple of weeks later. And that was the time when she told us it was something with the heart. And I suppose I knew plenty of people who had holes in hearts or maybe, you know, heart things. So in my head, it was like,
we've all heard it growing up, you know, that it'll
be fine.
An issue
it'll
and people fine. Are fine
yeah,
with it.
Fine. Yeah. But then we went to the Coombe and we met the paediatric cardiologist. I was 24 weeks pregnant, so just coming up on 6 months. And that was a really tough day. And I talk about it in the book. And I know it'll be emotive for people, but like to get such a stark diagnosis where it was such a complicated heart defect that they told us to consider England and termination as the first option. And for me and John at the time, that was such a blow. But making the decision as to what to do next, like from a maternal, and I'm, you know, I find this hard, but like maternally, I was on the floor. Like I was just gone. Like I don't even remember an awful lot of those meetings. But militarily, I'm trained to make decisions. That's what you're paid. You get in charge allowance on a ship to make really tough calls. So I think that military skill set was me coming out, taking emotion out of it and making decisions. And then we made the decision to go to term. So then the maternal me had to pick myself up. And we didn't tell an awful lot of people at all because we were trying to protect them. But my decision and myself and John was that we would continue as strongly and as best as we could. So every day for me was, you know, if he got stronger, if he grew, because they'd given us such a bad diagnosis. So when Ciarán was born, they had asked us to sign a DNR in the Coombe. They had told us that he wouldn't cry. So Sean Daly was the obstetrician who was with us in surgery in the emergency section. And I remember that moment just before he was going to take Ciarán, because he said something to me. And he lifted Ciarán out and Ciarán roared the place down, like roared. And I remember Sean Daly looking at me and just being like, this is a fighter. Like, so Ciarán was in Crumlin within 3 hours of being born, and they had told us he would never get to Crumlin. So John went away in the ambulance with him, and like, for me, that was massive in lots of respects. But even that John got to have time with him, because I'd had like nearly 10 months.
Yeah.
So I think that, but I think the week that we were there, because he was 8'14" and he was gorgeous, and there's a beautiful, my favourite photo of him in the book.
I was looking at it again this morning. What a gorgeous child.
He was like gorgeous. Yeah, I do think every mother thinks their child is gorgeous, but I really think he was beautiful. Like, and his name actually means little dark prince, and he absolutely was. Mm-hmm. Like, but unfortunately, you know, everything that was wrong with his heart was wrong with his heart. But he had this amazing first couple of days where, you know, we got to christen him. Grandparents, aunts and uncles got to come in and meet him. And when it went badly, badly wrong for us at the end, again, you know, we all have different beliefs around the world. Some people have beliefs, some people have none. But my granny was very, very sick at the time. She should have died before Christmas. Her kidneys had failed. And this was the 13th of January, and she passed away on the 13th, Friday the 13th. And I genuinely thought she was taking Ciarán's place. So kind of give us a lift. And then he crashed going to surgery. And we had a horrendous time in the coom with a fantastic team of people around us, but not our family, because my family were at the funeral and John's family were very ill at the time, so they couldn't come in. But when we lost Ciarán, like, I describe it in the book as honestly as I can, because it's like it's devastating to be in that position. But then you've got to make a decision what you do next. And for us, like, it was trying to stay afloat in the storm. And there was an awful lot of the knowledge I had from the sea that was keeping me going. But it definitely, you know, I don't know, I look back and I don't understand how we got through it.
Yeah, but you know what I really appreciated it from reading the book was that you're very honest about how your perspective on everything changed and your priorities changed. And I can see that in how you were making decisions when it came to your career. Mm. And I love that honesty, because if you deny that, it's not the truth.
Yeah, yeah. Like, when I went back to work, I would have thought my immediate reaction would be back to work. And my bosses thought I would be back. They thought, that's how Maria will cope. She'll pick herself up, she'll throw herself into work, and she will be 100% going. And they were shocked as I was when I wasn't. And I took my full maternity leave, even though I was at home with no baby. And some days were devastatingly difficult just to even get out of bed. But when I did go back to work, I had to do a promotion interview. That's another chapter in the book. But actually recognising my competitors in that competition, because they actually were the ones who got me in there. Like, I shouldn't have turned up for that interview because I wasn't able, but they got me ready. So they actually helped me to compete in that competition. And because of that, one of them didn't get selected for promotion. So, like, that's the kind of team spirit and camaraderie and esprit de corps that is in the Navy. Like, somebody sacrificed their career for me. They could have let me at home.
Incredible.
Yeah, massive. But when I went back to work, like, I say this all the time, I looked the same, spoke the same, had the same uniform. People thought I was the same person, but I wasn't. And when I, and there's a whole other side in the book about the journey to command and taking command of the LEFA, but a year and a half later, when I went out to IFA, like, I knew I wasn't the same person, but I knew I could be a really good captain and I could be a very good leader, because I understood emotional intelligence and empathy in a way that I never understood before. So we could still work to the highest level. We could be absolutely professional. But at the same time, you know, I wasn't going to make people's lives any more difficult.
Yeah, that's what I really like about it, that you were the best that you can be and you were the best of the best, but you recognised what you had been through and you brought that to your work life.
Yeah.
And
that's
I mean, that is just being completely authentic.
Yeah. Well, Ciarán gave me huge bravery. Like, even the day I took command in Waterford, I had my speech written and I knew that's a big day in your career. Like, the VIPs are there, the head honchos, all the crew are there, and you get to make your first kind of public speech as a captain. And I had written a what I felt was a strong, you know, address, as much as for my crew as for anybody else. But as I walked out that day, the one person who wasn't in it was Ciarán. So as I stood at the podium in Waterford, I remember this moment and just being like, no, I can't deny him. So I said something like, recognising John and the sport, but the bouncing little boy that should have been on his daddy's knee. And the old me would have thought that would have made me weak and might have thought that my crew weren't able. But actually, for me, that was showing my crew that I was absolutely resilient, strong, and could cope with whatever was going to come at us in the following 2 years. But I think that the decisions around the Navy, like there's a whole other side to our story around infertility and what came next. And unfortunately, our journey to have more children wasn't straightforward. And everything they had told me about my fertility journey came to fruition. And we went through a really difficult, difficult journey to have the girls. And some of that I did when I was towards the end of my command at sea. But again, when I had the girls then, there was this recognition that, you know, I had lost all that time with Ciarán and I didn't want to lose more time with the girls. And unfortunately, the way the military promotion system works, you do have to sacrifice a lot from a family perspective. And I have huge respect for the people who do. But, you know, it didn't mean the same to me then. And also I wanted to be me. And you can't be you when you're in a uniform all the time. And that cadet who was gregarious and outgoing and talked a lot and asked a lot of questions, that is me. So when I left the Navy, there was huge regret at the camaraderie, losing the camaraderie, the team spirit. But then there was this bravery that I was given to go and try something different. And I threw caution to the wind and I had no real plan. And now I find myself in this world. And people have been so good to me over the last number of years, Claire. And I think sometimes we can listen to all the negativity and we can hear all this, that and the other about people and how we treat each other. Like, I have a fabulous network of support, but I meet the best people, whether it's in private sector companies, not-for-profits, public sector entities. Like, I meet great people and most of them want to be able to work better together in teams and most of them want to treat each other well. And, you know, that's what's great about us.
Yeah, but I can tell that they learn valuable lessons from you as well, including this person who got in touch. I did a postgrad with Marie a few years ago. We just started the course when COVID hit and everything moved online. She was one of the class reps. And thanks to her natural leadership, what could have been a disastrous situation turned into an amazing experience as we all helped each other get through the course and get through those difficult times. You're smiling. You might even know who that is.
I don't know. I have a suspicion, but I don't know. And if it's who I think it is, I never would have thought they'd message into a radio show. So I didn't know anything about it. But yeah, I just think, yeah, look, the Navy made me the woman I am. But Ciarán gave me the bravery to walk away when it would have been easier to stay in a lot of respects.
Look, Marie, we're going to leave it there. But I just want to tell people, I loved this book. And as I said to Marie when she walked in, I just took such joy out of reading it because it is so honest. And it's so interesting because the Irish Navy, there are very few people who know the Navy as intimately as you and a couple of your colleagues do. It's called Be Like the Sea, Life, Learnings and Leadership from an Irish Navy Captain by Marie Gleeson. An honour to meet you. Thank you so much.
Pleasure. Thank you, Claire.
The Claire Byrne Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekday mornings at 9 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.